So what is it that we can do about it? Can we do some dietary intervention and try to make this better? We have some pretty good data. And you could talk about, you know, Atkins versus Ornish, which was a big thing in the 90s, vegan versus eating meat all the time. And but the fact of the matter is, if you're counting calories with Weight Watchers, no matter what you're doing, if you restrict the calories, you will lose weight. Now, you could argue that in a prospective randomized trial like this one with Bree Turner McGreevy, that you will do better, substantially better, if they're plant-based approaches to lowering the calories. And that's great. Agree with that completely. But it really is about lowering the calories. Now, let's talk about diabetes and hypertension to put an even finer point on it. We actually have good data from Adventist Health that doing plant-based nutrition, which they recommend to their congregation, some of them are completely vegan, but there's a plurality of lacto-ovo-vegetarian, as well as people who eat a variety of diets, and then a large number of people who actually have a standard American diet, because this is Loma Linda, California, it is Americans. And but what you see with the blessing of having all those people filling out food frequency questionnaires for 30 years or so is that the Adventists can take a good look at who's overweight. That's a body mass index more than 25. Who's diabetic, who's hypertensive. And it's very clear that the only group that's not overweight are the people who are doing completely plant-based nutrition. The diabetics are much less frequent. Hypertensive, also less frequent. Now, the question is always going to be there. Does that change in risk factor frequency, does that result in lower mortality? And the answer is yes, particularly in men in their group. They were seeing 30% reductions in ischemic heart disease. That's the, you know, hardening of the arteries, coronary artery disease, and overall cardiovascular disease, 30% reductions in death. And so this is one of their cute little slides talking about the frequency of each diet with each decade. I'm sure that in a few years they're going to publish the 80-year-olds, and you'll see probably that the plant-based nutrition in green is going to exceed the red, and that's you know, death and attrition in the red group because people are changing their diet after a stroke or after a heart attack. What would be great is if we could get them to do that ahead of time. The longevity issue is very clear, that if you do, the more plants you do, the longer you live. But it's not just about that. I try to emphasize with my patients that sure, you're gonna have a longer life, but you're gonna have a fuller life, because when you're 30 pounds lighter on average, you are actually getting less joint replacement. You're getting up and down the mountains and enjoying the outdoors and doing things that the average American unfortunately is not doing right now. And so what I'm really pushing for is not just a better quantity of life, but better quality as well. Now, blood pressure is something that is really one of the most expensive things, diseases in our Medicare system. About 67% of all Medicare beneficiaries actually have hypertension. And when you do plant-based interventions, such as shown on this Neil Barnard meta-analysis, it's very clear that people who go and switch over to plants are going to have a fall in their blood pressure. And we've had good prospective randomized data, as you saw in the previous slide. And this one, talking about the DASH studies, very well done. Wasn't intended to be necessarily plant-based. It was supposed to be more minerals and less sodium. And but they're able to subcategorize how well people followed what kind of diet. And notice in red that if the people in the DASH trial were doing a lower fat and cholesterol diet, that is less animal products, they got a significantly better blood pressure response. So we actually put all this into guidelines. The American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association 2017 guidelines actually talk specifically about physical activity, moderation of alcohol, making sure that people are exercising, losing weight, that we cut the sodium, we increase the potassium, which can have its own antihypertensive effect. And so it's no wonder that in green, doing a healthy diet, fruits and vegetables, whole grains, you will actually end up with an additional, a substantial reduction in blood pressure. So it was after, you know, still having a little bit of PTSD over publishing this document and having people say that we were in the pocket of the pharmaceutical industry because we changed the definition of hypertension from 140 down to 130. And that just meant that whoever was criticizing us was not paying attention to the document itself, because we were pushing lifestyle. And if you make these lifestyle changes, you can get around drugs many times. And, you know, and even if you don't, you can start with them to see if the blood pressure goes down, if it's not too far above normal. And if it is significantly above and you need to actually start medication, you still should be doing lifestyle with an eye toward reducing medication use in the future. So hopefully that message has gotten out there now 4 years later, and people understand that we are talking about lifestyle. I'm going to talk about sugar for a little bit, because it represents a particular problem. People, if you ever, you know, put in a web search, sugar addiction, you would see all the data about serotonin and dopamine in the brain and the insulin levels going up. And when the blood sugar goes down, the best solution to make yourself feel better about this is to eat more sugar again. And so people can become sugar addicts. And from the cardiovascular point of view, this is very dangerous. So what you're seeing here is a dose-related response between three different types of sugar: glucose, sucrose, and fruit sugar, fructose, but also white bread. This is refined wheat. Take the kernel out, take the husk away, and this, what you're left with is this juicy portion that is the kernel, taking away the bran and the fiber. And what you're ending up with is something that's rapidly absorbed and increases sugar levels so quickly that you get this insulin response. So what's wrong with insulin? And Banting and Best are probably rolling over in their, rolling over in their grave with me criticizing insulin, because their discovery of insulin saved a lot of diabetic lives. There's no question about that. The problem is this, that it ruins blood vessels. It increases blood vessel resistance so that you end up with more blood pressure. You end up with more high triglycerides. You end up with more insulin resistance when you have a high serum insulin level. And insulin is a wonderful growth hormone, and it increases atherosclerotic plaque. That means more hardening of the arteries, more heart attack, stroke, peripheral artery disease, erectile dysfunction, and death. And so this is a hormone that you would like to have as low as possible, and or said better, that you have as low as you need, have as much as you need, and need very little. And that is really dietary. If you have a high amount of sugar in your diet, you end up with a higher mortality. That was published several years ago. And that was an interesting sort of the NHANES survey data. A very separate data set said basically the same thing, and that is nurses' health analyzed for nutrition. Sure, nurses die when they get older. Nurses die when they're smoking, okay? And nurses will die faster when they're diabetic, but they die more of eating a glycemic load, that is a sugar load, like a glazed donut, is more dangerous than eating a hamburger or a steak, where you end up with increased mortality, but not numerically quite as high as the sugar load. On the other hand, eating cereal fiber would actually drop your mortality. And so life and death really does boil down to food choices that we make.